Views and commentaries are for entertainment only. The views and opinions expressed therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
Good morning, Fairbanks. You are listening to KFAR Radio. We're at 660 on the AM dial, 97.5 on the FM dial, and we live stream at KFARradio.com. This is Problem Corner. I'm your host, David Pruse. If you have a question or want to call into the guests this morning, we're at 907-458-TALK. That's 907-458-8255. And with that, we have the Executive Director of the Fairbanks Economic Development Corporation, Jomo Stewart, in the studio with me. Jomo, how are you doing?
I'm well, sir. How are you?
Doing well. Enjoying yourself on this rainy day right before the Midnight Sun game?
I am. I'm going to be honest. I do love when the Lord waters my lawn.
Me too.
Save me a couple bucks.
I got up this morning at about 5:30. I'm like, oh, yeah, cool. Yeah, okay, dog. And, you know, about 5:55, me and the dog walk out the door, and I got to put on a little jacket and my baseball cap, you know. I said, we're good. Okay, let's go for a 25-minute walk. And we did it.
So, no, not too much rain and not too many cloudy
days. I want to be able to mow my lawn in about a day.
But when it comes in a nice cycle, it is nice.
Yeah, I don't pay Golden Heart Utilities for both the water and the sewer.
And the sewer.
They get you both ways when you water your lawn. Yeah. Fedco, active, busy. Overall, how are you guys doing?
Actually, we're doing pretty good. Okay. As just a corporation, we're doing pretty good. I'm very happy to say. Over the course of the last year, we've had some good relations. We've had some improved relations with our FNSB partners, and that's been great. We've had improving relations with our city partners. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You all were just kind enough to give us a little bit of a raise. It's deeply appreciated. So that's great. And then going along with that, though, we've been a bit introspective over the course of the last 2 years. Coming in as a new CEO. It seemed like a good time to maybe do a reassessment of the corporation, how we operate, the things we focus on. And so we've been moving through a strategic planning process for the last year. And in the last couple of months, we did certify a new high-level strategic plan. So that's great. And now we're transitioning over to a more granular tactical action plan.
You know, it's interesting how you say that this morning. Me and the chief of staff we're going to start on Friday, get together, and we'll go through our strategic plan. And our strategic plan is more general, and I'm not a generalized person. So we're going to take our strategic plan and put tactical in it, exactly, and then we'll present it to the city council.
Mm-hmm. You know, let's bore in. What do we want to focus on?
Yeah.
And what would we like to get done? Again,
you know,
it's about achieving things.
And since they did this strategic plan 3 or 4 years ago, it's never been dusted off. No one's looked at it. No one said, oh, what was our strategic plan anyway? Because it's so general. And I don't generalize. I'm direct.
So, okay.
Yeah. So what the heck?
Well, that's actually a good transition, too. So, the community did get together a couple of years ago. On the new update on the SEDS, got that certified last year. And again, that's the broader community strategic plan. But it did include a rather full and robust list of not only goals, but defined actions, you know, things they wanted to achieve and how they would, you know, we would all work together to try to achieve them. And we actually do refer to that very, very regularly in my shop. And we consider that our marching orders.
Okay.
Is the SEDS. Again, the community got together, and an example would be, regarding agriculture. There was a proposal in the governor's budget, his draft budget, this session that would have, if it had been adopted by the legislature, would have appropriated $3 million down to the Mat-Su Correctional Farm for them to establish a food processing facility. You know, the Mat-Su Correctional Farm actually has a farm. It's not just a penitentiary.
It's old school.
Yeah, they're growing food. But, you know, and they actually distribute that food throughout the system. The jail system. But they wanted a facility to, again, better scrub, process, prepare for storage, prepare for distribution, their food products. Our SEDS speaks to our community having some kind of food processing facilities, again, to support our agriculture industry.
Yeah, and it's a growing industry in the interior with Nenana starting to sell off real estate.
Correct. You know, and with a range. In fact, I wish I messed up. I'll bring it to your office. We have just finished the new 2023 Community Agriculture Directory. Mm-hmm. And so it lists all the farms, the farmers markets, the places you can go to get produce, you know, where you can go to get CSAs.
Hey, my agricultural farm is every Saturday out at the farmers market.
Out at the farmers market. Yep.
I have a green wallet.
Yep. And it's great. It's nice to be able to support our local agriculture and industry. But again, that's the governor asking for something in Mat-Su that we have asked for as a community here in the interior. And so we did advocate over the session to see if we might piggyback off of that request to do a feasibility study regarding, again, that kind of thing in our community. But back to the SEDS, community gets together every so often, works broadly across the community to come up with a suite of goals and actions to pursue them.
Mm-hmm.
And we look at that, again, as our marching orders relative to the economy and things we can be doing.
You know, it's interesting, going back to the governor, his budget came out yesterday. He vetoed $220 million worth of items. And, you know, I look at this and what he's been doing since he became governor is he is lowering the subsidies to the municipalities from the state. You know, their revenue's going down. These are your costs. This is what you have to do. And so yesterday he took out the community assistance and he cut the base student allowance or whatever they want to call it, their funding in half. So, this is what he does. He can't put it in, but he can take it out.
Well, and the reality is, I mean, dollars are finite. Mm-hmm. They have to come from somewhere.
Yeah.
So demands on government, you know this implicitly, Mr. Mayor, demands on government always outstrip the dollars available to meet those needs through government.
Yes.
You need to have some downward pressure on budgets or they can get out of control pretty easily. The flip side of that is, so I'll be honest with you, David, Mr. Mayor, I've been.
It's David.
I've been pretty reflective over the last couple of years. And frankly, it's getting more acute.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I've been looking at more intently, frankly, we need to deal up the PFD.
Mm-hmm.
We need to deal up the PFD. It is skewing our discussions on a whole range of other things. And I'm not saying how we should end up dealing it up, but dealing it up in a way that is durable so that it can allow air in the room for other discussions is something we need to do.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of investments we could really use across this state.
Yeah, and if you look at what the Senate did, you know, the House sent them over a 50-50 PFD and an unfunded budget. You know, they were half a billion dollars low in their budget. And without going into the Constitutional Budget Reserve, so the Senate just sat on it, and then last day sent it back over. Here it is. Here's our budget, and it's a 25% PFD, and half of what you wanted for this base student allotment, and we balanced. And so anyway, they said yes to all that, the House did. They probably wanted a little bit more in the permanent fund, I know that. But it's such a balancing act. And the permanent fund, that dividend in the legislature sucks the air out of the room. And if you want to have a very open, hard, biting discussion, you on this radio station, you put the permanent fund dividend on there, and boom, you know, lights up. Everyone has a different opinion. There's 770,000 people in the state of Alaska, and there's 770,000
opinions.
Yeah. But, you know, there's only 61 opinions that matter because you have 60 people in the legislature and the governor.
Well, all of our opinions matter.
Yeah.
I will say this. So I got to sit in on a meeting, I guess it was last week, with the Interior Delegation, the Chamber of Commerce and the Interior Delegation. And, you know, nice discussion. One of the things that's under active discussion there in the legislature is a constitutional spending limit. Again, we talked about downward pressure on government and its spending. But it did occur to me, speaking of air out of rooms, and I said so, there are some things we know are systemic drivers within our state budget.
Yeah.
And until we wrap our arms around them and figure out a way to restrain them, then any discussion of a constitutional spending cap is really a commitment to spend less and less on anything but those systemic drivers.
And if you look at what the governor did, since he became governor, he only increases spending by 1% per year. That's it. You know, spending only goes up by 1%. We don't have the revenue to do the things that you want to do, so I am capping our spending. He can cap the income. He doesn't get to, you know, put in income, but he can
cap
take
the
out
spending.
Yeah, and that's what he's done, 1% per year.
But the cost of, so here's a prime example.
Yeah.
Healthcare costs. Mm-hmm. We know that healthcare costs are, the rate of inflation on healthcare costs is grossly outside, even at the high inflation rates we've been, you know, seeing the last couple of years, grossly beyond that rate of inflation. Mm-hmm. And so a 1%, you know, increase
takes away from other locations.
When you have a 7, 8, 9, 10% increase in, say, healthcare costs, means it's gobbling up funds that could go to other places.
Yeah.
We know here in this community, cost of energy.
Oh, yeah.
You can turn down the lights, you can turn down the heat, but when it is 40 below...
You're not turning down the heat that much.
And
you're not keeping it froze.
And you only have 2 hours of daylight. There's only so many lights you can shut off for so long, and so far down you can turn the heat. And so unless we can get our arms around that, progressively it eats up more and more of the funding that could and should be spent on other things.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. We're going to have some messages, and we'll be back after these messages.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
The Valdez Fishing Report, brought to you by Frontier Supply Company on Van Horn Road, the only Alaska-owned full-line wholesale distributor of plumbing, heating, industrial piping, waterworks, and mining products for over 30 years. Sure, they're big enough to handle the supply needs of pipelines and gold mines, but they're personable enough to help you with your needs as well. Frontier Supply Company, for all of your plumbing and heating needs, on Van Horn Road, online at frontiersupply.com. That's Frontier Supply Company.
It's time for the Valdez Fishing Report. Interviews, derby standings, tips, and advice for Prince William Sound.
This is Ricky Colapietro with an update on fishing in Valdez. Carl Tilton of Fairbanks, Alaska went out on a two-day halibut charter and was glad he had a derby ticket when he landed a 95.6-pound halibut last Tuesday. He was glad he had tickets for both days he fished in the Sound on his overnight charter. A one-day Valdez halibut derby ticket is purchased and dated for one day, so anglers wanting to go overnight typically buy two daily tickets to make sure they are eligible to win. There is also a halibut derby season ticket that costs $50 and allows anglers to weigh in some halibut for a chance to win prizes for the entire length of the halibut derby. Telton was not the only angler who had a productive day out on the water aboard the charter boat Reflection. Luke Lovejoy also reeled in an 89-pound halibut on the same charter, and everyone caught rockfish in addition to their limit of halibut. Tilton and Lovejoy both got on the leaderboard, and their boatload of fish drew a crowd at the Valdez Harbor. When Tilton was asked about his fight with the 95.6-pound halibut, Tilton responded,
"Pretty good struggle. My forearms were plumb wore out by the time we got him in. Well, that's pretty much about it, the big fish."
In the Valdez Halibut Derby, Troy Dolge of Copper Center, Alaska is still on top of the leaderboard and currently first in line to win the $10,000 grand prize with a 203-pound halibut, caught June 4th aboard the Reflection.
Call Fish Central and get out on the water to catch fish and fill your freezer this summer. Fish Central can hook you up with charter reservations or a boat rental and give you the advice you need to navigate the local waters. Once you've caught your limit, bring it in for processing. Visit fishcentral.net or call 835-5002 to book your fishing adventure today.
KVAK's Valdez Fishing Report. Fish Valdez and reel in a big one.
KFAR weather.
Daytime highs approaching 67 today under overcast skies with a chance for scattered showers. Southerly winds around 5 miles per hour. Chance for scattered showers again tonight. Lows dip down to about 54. Overcast skies. Cloudy skies expected tomorrow. Scattered rain showers likely. High temperatures reach up to 66. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. General Stewart is visiting me here in the studio. How are you doing, sir?
I'm well, sir.
You recently, I was at an event that you hosted, the Red Flag Observers Dinner. That was interesting.
Yes, sir. So we had a kind of an international week with
FBC. Boy, did you.
We did. So we started the week on Monday. There was a delegation of Romanian businessmen had come to the community. Turns out the president of Romania has decided that he would like his country to become a center of innovation, technology transfer, manufacturing there in Eastern Europe, and has sent out delegations of Romanians to kind of try to build relationships across the around the world to help instigate that and carry it forward. Well, one of, you know, several of those delegations are in the United States. One of them decided they wanted to come see Alaska, kind of do a little scoping meeting, or some scoping meetings. And so, yeah, they were in Anchorage last week, and then they came up to Fairbanks. Again, we hosted them on Monday, so that was really neat. Yeah, the guy with the materials manufacturing facility was the big hit, doing very innovative materials, insulation, both hot and cold, Kevlars, all kinds of stuff. That was neat. Everybody was interested in that. And then, yeah, on Sunday, yes, observing red flags. So we have our international partners here in the community doing joint training. Yeah, it's we're stronger with our friends, and of course, we're our relationships and our ability to do and achieve things improves as we work together. You know, we're habituated to be able to work seamlessly together. But either way, so a lot of really high brass,
yes,
and some of our allied partners with the Air Force were in state to observe those trainings and to go actually see the training grounds. And yes, so we hosted them at a dinner, as we do. FEDC hosts them every year for a nice, they call it the Executive Observers Program, and so we host them for a nice dinner. And so thank you very much for coming. I hope you, who did you have at your table?
I had the Air Marshal of New Zealand and the Air Marshal of Indonesia.
I had a couple of big generals, one from Italy, one from the Netherlands, and I got to actually meet General Nahom. So he's one of the top commanders here for the state of Alaska for the Air Force. And that was great. That was actually the first time I got to physically meet him. So that was, it was nice to be able to spend time with him.
Yeah, it was interesting, you know, just talking with him and the differences and the similarities of a Western world, a Western country. And we have it well. We have it well. And I asked him about, you know, especially Indonesia, the China influence. And boy, was he speaking to me about the China influence.
Well, you know, they're all the way across the Pacific from us.
Yeah.
They are right above Indonesia.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him which countries that they work well with. And he said Korea and Japan. The surrounding ones, keeping China bottled in. Yeah.
And that's a mark of progress,
yeah.
Certainly since World War II.
The enemy of my ally is my ally.
Well, and, you know, China's, you know, really feeling its oats, you know, expanding, trying to expand its field of influence, both on a dollar and a militaristic basis. A lot of it is about controlling trade routes. And,
yeah,
of course, you know, the major trade routes come through by Indonesia. They're in the straits, heading, you know, from Asia, you know, from, say, Europe, the Middle East, Africa, and back again. So I'm not surprised to hear that their eyes are pointed north from Indonesia, just like ours are pointed west.
Looking at going north, the Willow Project.
The Willow Project.
Yeah. How do you review that, you know, in economics for the city of Fairbanks?
Well, okay. So we did support the Willow Project and its sanction. Wrote a couple letters in that regard. The reality is Fairbanks is a logistics hub. It's a logistics hub. All roads to the North Slope
and from
the
North Fairbanks.
Slope come through Fairbanks.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's the ancillary economic impacts of continued activity on the North Slope and things that sustain that province and its production.
You know, I saw Senator Murkowski, and I thanked her for really putting the thumb on the Biden administration about not vetoing this. Do not do it. And I thanked Senator Sullivan for getting it done. And when I was down in Juneau, the House chair of the Resources Committee, a very fine person, he asked me, what can he do for Fairbanks? And I said, get another Willow. Get an oil field going. Then let capitalism, nature, take its course. And that's economics. That puts people to work. That's jobs. That's jobs, non-governmental jobs that really help out families. You put a miner to work, you put a mine to work, you put an oil field to work, and the ancillary jobs that happen with that, that's what I asked them to do. Get a couple more of those.
Okay. Yeah.
If I had a magic wand.
So we just had, actually, so just this morning, you know that Fairbanks Economic Development, we have a Tuesday morning energy task force.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Energy for All Asset Task Force. And just for the listeners, it's open to the public. Anybody, if you'd ever like to be on the mailing list and get the invites to be able to listen in on those meetings and participate, just go ahead and email us over at Fairbanks Economic Development. Or you can, you know, Google, you can find us on www.investfairbanks.com. Either way, the discussion for today was actually a presentation on the not adopted climate action plan. So, the reality is, so you ask about Willow and continued development on the North Slope. You know, the reality is, you know, we are not going to mix metaphors, we're not just going to warp speed to Star Trek. We still need hydrocarbons and those conventional resources while we transition over to cleaner, less, negatively impactful systems. Really, it's about that progress, realizing that it's not either or. It can't be just either or, and it is going to be a progression. So moving in earnest through those steps to get us to that greener, less impactful future, while recognizing, again, the reliance we still have and must have, are going to have for a while on these conventional resources, and frankly, using the revenues from development of those conventional resources to move into that, that brighter future. I mean, that's what it's always been about. Since we started working on Prudhoe Bay out of Cook Inlet. Again, that was the concept behind the permanent fund itself, taking the revenues from a finite resource and trying to turn them into a longer-term dollar-generating resource for our future.
There you go. Fairbanks, we are going to take a little bit of a break here. I've got some bumper music for you, the Human League, so that probably means that Glenner put in this music. Then we're going to have some Fox News, some state news, some commercials, some weather, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at
KFARradio.com. News, I'm Rich Dennison. President Biden's son Hunter reaching a deal with federal prosecutors to plead guilty to misdemeanor tax evasion charges and enter a pretrial diversion program to resolve a felony gun charge.
He was charged with failing to pay federal income tax and illegal possession of a weapon as a drug user. The agreement ends a years-long investigation into Hunter Biden that has been led by the U.S. attorney in Delaware, a holdover of the Trump administration.
Fox's Jared Halpern. An initial trial date's now been set for the federal criminal trial of former President Trump on charges stemming from classified documents kept at his Florida resort.
U.S. District Court Judge Eileen Cannon, a Trump appointee, says former President Donald Trump's trial is now scheduled to begin August 14th at the federal court in Fort Pierce, Florida. It is likely the trial will be delayed.
Fox's Eben Brown. America is listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
A press release sent from the office of Governor Mike Dunleavy revealed the items vetoed when the governor signed the fiscal year 2024 state operating and capital budgets yesterday. Funding intended for Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program Partnership, Head Start Program, the University of Alaska Anchorage, University of Alaska Southeast, and the University of Alaska Fairbanks were among the items slashed. Cuts to primary and secondary education were also made, with marked increases to the base student allocation having been greatly reduced by the cuts. A major school maintenance grant will also be cut, leaving only enough funds for the completion of five projects on the Department of Education and Early Development's list of major maintenance projects. This budget is a responsible path for Alaska's financial future, Dunleavy said in a press release. Budget should reflect the values of Alaskans. The FY24 budget accomplishes that. We continue to invest in public safety, public education, and economic development. I look forward to working with lawmakers and Alaskans to establish a long-term sustainable fiscal plan.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com. June is DeWalt month at Denali Industrial Supply. If you miss Demo Day, don't worry. You still have time to take advantage of the DeWalt tool sale through June 30th. The Denali crew would like to thank all of you who stopped by our DeWalt Demo Day. The DeWalt sale through the end of the month at Denali Industrial Supply, your home for DeWalt tools. Denali Industrial Supply, 1499 Van Horn Road. Look for the big red roof.
After almost two decades of caring for patients throughout the state, the specialists at Alaska Vein Care are excited to serve the interior of Alaska at their new Fairbanks location. With years of experience treating varicose veins and spider veins, they've helped thousands of Alaskans look their best and enjoy their favorite activities again without pain. Treatment is minimally invasive and most people return to work the next day. To learn more, give them a call at 907-334-3347 or visit their website at alaskaveincare.com. Alaska Vein Care, where will your legs take you?
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back in the studio here with Jomo Stewart of FEDCO, enjoying ourselves. University of Alaska, many things going on up there, very innovative.
Yes.
Especially over the last 4 or 5 years.
Yes. Mm-hmm. One of the good things, one of the big things I get to be involved in, appreciatively so, is I'm on the one of the citizen advisory panels for AQUASI, the drone program. The UAF unpersoned aerial vehicle program, and that's neat stuff. So talk about an opportunity. We as a state have managed to position ourselves really well, actually, relative to that industry. We are in a leading position as it stands now. Now, a lot of what AQUASI is doing is about helping the FAA go through the steps it needs to go through to be able to allow UAVs to fly in the civilian airspace, along with manned aircraft and aircraft carrying people. But again, that is the wave of the future, and the fact that we are at the cutting edge of that is great news. It's great stuff. The university is also doing a lot of work and a lot of observation relative to, say, cutting-edge energy. We've all heard of the proposal to place a micronuclear reactor there at Eielson Air Force Base, mm-hmm. and the university has taken the lead. Our campus of the university has taken the lead. Gwen Holdman now over at UA Research, relative to just understanding this cutting-edge technology, helping the public understand this cutting-edge technology, and then finally starting to look at and maybe start to get a jump start on some of the things and activities that might be unlocked, opportunities that might be unlocked, having this kind of energy source in our community, in our region. I will tell you, I had the chance to go down with a delegation of Alaskans to Idaho National Lab last summer, in the fall, when there was a tour mm-hmm. of those facilities. And one of the more interesting ones that we got to visit was one where they were testing out some of the things that you could do with nuclear power. And really what we're talking about is not unlimited, but almost unlimited source of heat. And the kinds of commercial and manufacturing activities you could do with this power. And it was some fascinating stuff. So we talked about, touched briefly on conventional energy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so one of the things they were doing there at the lab was, you know, like cracking natural gas, cracking more conventional hydrocarbons to free up the hydrogen, you know, break it down to its constituent molecular parts. When they talk about ammonia, really what you're talking about with ammonia, because you know that's a big point of discussion, is really what we're talking about is energy storage and ammonia as a carrying mechanism for hydrogen. Hydrogen is an extremely small molecule, and so it's really hard to kind of handle, mm-hmm. containerize, handle, and transport. And ammonia is more fungible, not unlike oil. So, you know, with this kind of power source, you could, you know, crack hydrocarbons. You can be reformulating molecules, creating hydrogen for the hydrogen economy, creating ammonia to unlock the hydrogen economy, breaking carbon dioxide bonds to take the carbon and make carbon fiber. And now you're actually making the components for windmills, you know, in those solar panels. Mm-hmm. I will tell you, so I told you I've been a bit reflective.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of what's rolling around in my mind and has been for the last couple of years is it occurs to me, I have a lot of faith in our community. I have a lot of faith in the potential of Alaska and Fairbanks. It's really our great inhibitor is our inability, or certainly at this point, that we haven't tried to or come to consensus on what we want to be. Because I feel like if we just decided, if we all got on board with a vision, with what we wanted to be, we could achieve it. So here's an example. You know, Alaska is in the interior region, we are a world-class mineralized province. World-class. It's why we have these, you know, these large operating gold and copper mines. But the components for those rare earths, critical minerals that you need for things like microchips, for the batteries that go in electric cars, things like that, we have those things in abundance. I feel like if Alaska decided it wanted to be, we could become the China and Taiwan for the free world by developing, mining those critical and rare earths, leveraging the more of the strategic paradigm of the Kinross project, centralized mineral processing, Fairbanks becoming the processing center for those critical and rare earth minerals, you know, their refinement. And then maybe chip production, both here in the interior and down in the Matsu. Because we need those materials. Right now, we talked about China. Right now, the vast, you know, a large percentage of those critical and rare earths in a refined and usable state, it's happening and it's coming from China. Taiwan is where they're making the chips, but it's right off the coast of China. And we've gotten to see with the Ukraine and Russia situation, that's a bit of a risky position to be in.
Yes.
But it all would start with we deciding as Alaskans that that is what we would want to be.
There you go.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. So here at FEDC, a lot of what we do, I have to kind of watch myself. We try to both identify the opportunities available to our community and help us pursue them, but also try to get at those, we mentioned kind of systemic drivers and inhibitors, mm-hmm. You know, that are kind of holding us back. I have to watch myself because you end up you get to advocate. It's nice to advocate. It's fun to advocate. But a lot of the actual direct work you end up doing is about trying to get at those inhibitors. Mm-hmm. Things like child care. You know, if we need to really deal up child care to free up our labor force. Mm-hmm. Things like broadband. I mean, one of the things we found during COVID for years and years and years, we had talked about distance education. And then we looked up and found that, you know, it was hard to do distance delivery just across Chena Ridge, let alone all the way out to rural Alaska.
Ready for a phone call?
Oh, good Lord. Sure.
There we go. Good morning. You're on KFER Radio, and your name is?
Phil. I tuned in late, but I really appreciate your guest. I have a question. Does he have much information or knowledge about what the status is of rare earth production in Alaska, and if there's any way for a small-time miner to actually work into something like that? I have a son who's made a discovery of rare earth ground. I just wonder if he had any info on that.
Sure. So we've I'll just start with, as always, I'm not the expert on that.
But he does play one on the radio.
And I did stay at Holiday Inn Express last night. So it turns out critical and rare earths, they're actually not that rare. They're abundant. They're everywhere. It's just that the concentrations of them generally are really, really low. So what we're talking about is, again, trying to aggregate and refine. We have had a couple of presentations at FEDC from like the state geologist, most recently from Mr. Le Pen, regarding the prevalence of those critical and rare earths. The reason the Chinese were able to kind of capture this market, it's one of the upsides of a command economy, lots of downsides of an authoritarian system under a command economy, obviously. But one of the upsides is great leader can say, I see an opportunity, I want to capture it. And they will throw resources at it to try to capture that opportunity. And
China, cheap manual resources.
And China did do that two generations ago. And so that's why they're, you know, again, a leader in the production of and the sale of refined critical and rare earths. So, again, our prevalence of it is high, but the concentrations are always low. And there's been money made available. The United States recognizes that we are behind the eight ball. The Western world realizes that we are, again, in a vulnerable position. My understanding is that through these federal authorizations over the last couple of years, funds have been made available to support the creation of production and refinement facilities, chip manufacturing facilities. What I don't know is who, if anyone, in the state of Alaska is in earnest trying to actually get in on that game. But I am supposed to be talking to the Alaska miners on Friday, and that was actually one of the questions I was going to lob out to them.
Any other questions there?
It seems like that'd be something that the state could possibly get involved in also, perhaps with some grant money of their own to help kickstart something like this.
Yeah, they found a world-renowned graphite location out, you know, on the Norton Sound or area near Nome Kotzebue. And so, and then you have the road to Ambler, and that has rare earth resources up there. But you always have the component of the conservation movement trying to shut down anything in Alaska. I mean, anything in Alaska. And yet we have more resources than anywhere in the United States. And so you have that battle to go through.
Well, it's also one of the reasons I feel like we do need to deal up the PFD. So as you mentioned, again, at a 50-50 split, the House was able to create a budget, but it didn't balance. At a 25-75 split, the Senate did balance the budget and did make some extra funds available for education. In any case, what we haven't been able to do for many, many years, too many years, is have the free funds available to, as you're noting, sir, kind of make investments, strategic investments. We've basically, our capital budgets for a long time were really, there were $100 million because that was the 10% match for to leverage federal highway funds to the tune of about $1 billion. That's actually a pretty good investment. My feeling is, my thought has been that this moment in time with federal funds on the table, with if we got together as Alaskans and decided, again, whatever we want to be and some strategic things we would want to get in on, that with maybe a little bit of grant money, some favorably termed loans. I mean, ADA has a lot of money under management that could be used more of on an investment basis. Again, you put those funds together, a little bit of grant money, some favorably termed loans, leveraged with some larger federal funds, and we could get some things done. But it's about getting our house in order and getting our minds directed to the fact that that's where we want to go. It's kind of like the necessary precursor, and we haven't quite done that yet.
You know, I agree with that. For too long, Alaska's kind of had the mindset of being a almost like a third world economy where the resources are actually exploited, taken somewhere else, and we're just given the crumbs as far as the labor force to remove them. And much of that labor force is even imported from outside the state. And so the state ends up with very little in return for what they actually have in their own right.
Well, I appreciate the phone call. I got to take a break here, so you have a great afternoon and call anytime, okay?
All right, you bet. Thank you.
And Fairbanks, you're listening to KFAR Radio, and we'll be back after these messages.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
So how's your memory? Can you remember this name? It's Living Waters Plumbing and Mechanical. It's pretty simple. But it's a name you want to be familiar with. You see, good plumbers who can get to your problem quickly and do a top-quality job fixing it all at a reasonable price, well, let's simply say they're scarce. Living Waters Plumbing and Mechanical is quick to the problem, and they're quick to the solution. And when you have no heat, or you have a bad plumbing leak, your HVAC isn't working, or your pipes are frozen, you want your problem fixed. So who do you call? I told you to remember the name. It's Living Waters Plumbing and Mechanical. Boilers and water heaters, snow melt systems, of course, drain cleaning. They also own Victory Drains. And you'd be surprised how much more. So look, you don't have to try to remember the phone number. Just remember the name and look it up from there. One more time now. Say it with me. Living Waters. Right. Living Waters Plumbing and Mechanical. Okay, well done.
Whether you're flying or boating into your favorite fishing hole or just driving to the lake, make Frontier Outfitters your first stop for all the fishing gear, licenses, permits, and stamps you'll need. Frontier's extensive fishing department has the conventional, fly, or saltwater tackle for every game fish in Alaska's streams, rivers, lakes, and ocean habitats. Rods and reels, lures and natural bait, lines and nets, dip netting supplies, even sunglasses. Frontier Outfitters has what you need for your successful trip, plus marine parts and equipment downstairs at Century Hardware. Frontier Outfitters, for your Alaskan lifestyle.
KFAR weather.
Chance for scattered showers today, otherwise cloudy skies expected. Highs level off around 67, southerly winds around 5 miles per hour. Chance for scattered showers again tonight, lows around 54, overcast skies. High temperatures reach up to 66. Tomorrow, scattered rain showers likely. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. Jomo, how do you like all that construction equipment outside the window?
So I'm looking at it. I like that construction equipment. Now, it did almost make me late for this radio
yeah,
show because
I
forgot 5th was closed all the way up and down. You know, it looks like
a lot of neat toys out there.
Looks like progress to me.
Yeah.
And one of the things, okay, so I have been driving by. I've been trying to make a special effort to drive down 2nd Avenue, mm-hmm. like on my way to work in the mornings, just to kind of keep an eye on the progress at the Polaris building.
I do too.
And I know it's going a bit slower. Mm-hmm. It's a bit behind schedule. But, you know, it was nice to see. Frankly, I one day I drove by and I could see big piles of stuff, and then the next day I drove by and there was a hole, and I could see real clear progress because they had gotten through that layer and down to the subfloor. So it is moving along.
You know, there was just a lot of rebar and concrete in that floor and the walls. I mean, they're taking a look at that, and they just didn't realize how much that the construction standard of what they built in there. It's all the same price as the city of Fairbanks, But
oh, that sucker's a bunker, my man.
Oh, man. You know, I was looking at the rebar just in the floor. Oh, my goodness.
Stoutly built.
Yeah. And that's just for one story.
Now, speaking of economic development and the economy, and you, sir, are a realtor by trade, you know, it does occur to me, again, so there's development and then there's redevelopment. You know, I'm looking at the, you know, right now, again, they're repaving and doing work here on 5th. When you know, we look at the Polaris building, there's a lot of, stuff around this community that, frankly, over time has been eroding or has reached, frankly, just out-and-out dilapidated status. So figuring out a way to clear the decks in a way that allows, frankly, a profitable investment opportunity for a or a new developer is something, you know, I've been thinking about a lot, trying to figure out if that's something we should be participating in at FEDC or whom we can support, who, you know, that's kind of their bailiwick and that's what they want to do because, yeah, we've got a... I think, so just as your, again, your economic developer, I feel like we're actually doing pretty good. As an economy, I don't want to say it's all doom and gloom. I don't want to leave the impression that there's doom and gloom. Again, we have things that we need to get at. Generally speaking, our economy has actually been doing pretty good and certainly pretty good relative to other communities around the state. We came out of COVID better than a lot of communities. We haven't experienced the kind of depopulation, though we have experienced depopulation, not at the kind of level of other communities around the state. You know, we do have the growth of our military sector, our expanding missions and personnel at our military bases. It's very helpful. The things that are going on at, say, the IGU, their ability to nail down a long-term gas contract is the envy of other utilities around the state. The prices is maybe not as low as we would have liked. But again, just the fact that we as a community get to have that kind of security and surety, they're not getting to enjoy that down in Cook Inlet right now. And so that's a good thing. That's a good sign. And, oh, by the way, it's off the North Slope, you know, cracking the nut on North Slope energy to Alaskans, natural gas to Alaskans. It's a good thing. So there's lots of good things going on. We do have our headwinds that we need to try to work on. Things like cost of energy. So speaking of natural gas, and that nexus between our energy and how it impacts our atmospherics, i.e. air quality, just to let people know, last week our presentation at the Energy Group was the IGU. They've got their development plan for summer. They plan to put in as many as 600, maybe a little bit more than 600 new installs this year. They're ready to go. There's actually quite a bit of support available from the FNSB because it helps mitigate our air quality challenge to help support someone if they want to transition over to natural gas or just over to a cleaner, either solid fuel or liquid fuel burning appliance. Again, there's a lot of good things out there and a lot of opportunity out there.
You asked me a question earlier about development and redevelopment. If you should get involved or how you can get involved. And what I'd say to you is, yes, you can get involved in what you should be as an informational outlet. I would take a look and say, okay, for redevelopment or for remodeling, who has good loan programs? And you have the USDA, United States, anyway. You have the SBA. You have ADA. So you have these sources of loans that are guaranteed or given. SBA guarantees, ADA gives, and they partner with a bank. Then you should have probably a very good relationship with a CPA to say, okay, if you take a building that's worth $1 million and you put $500,000 investment in there, what does that do to your taxes? And give tax consequential advice on that. And then at the same time, you say to, I'd get involved, I'd bring someone in with the Chamber of Commerce, the Greater Fairbanks Board of Realtors, your group, so you can start making presentations. This is where you go get your source of money because we have a lot of older buildings that you're not going to be able to knock down and put something up and make it make sense. So you're still in a lot of redevelopment. You know, on the Polaris building, it made no economic sense for anyone to come in and knock it down, pay for it to knock it down. So you still have a lot of buildings from the 60s, 70s, and 80s that need to be remodeled? Source of funds. Where can you go and get that? And then, you know, the borough, if you go out and build multiplexes in the city limits or outside the city limits, you have real estate taxes that are abated for a while. Be able to explain that so you can give numbers to someone who owns a piece of property, who isn't that sophisticated at all this stuff, but have one source to tell people, this is what you can do, and this is how you can do it, what the numbers mean to you on financing, taxes, and rents.
Okay.
That's how I'd look at it.
Good way to look at it. That's why I asked a realtor professional.
Oh, goodness. But and there's a lot of buildings that need that remodel up here. And you're starting to get that in, you know, if it still shows 60s, 70s, and 80s, you're not going to get the price that you want for it. You got to go in there and do some upgrades and remodels, and it's a whole different type of remodel now. And, you know, over the next couple of years, your remodel prices per square foot are going to be coming down. You have more supply side coming in here, so... That's
well, I'll tell you, this is going to be my final segue in our final couple seconds. So, on the housing front, again, we all know that housing is an issue. Housing is a challenge. Affordable, quality housing. And it's not just it's been driven for the last couple of years by the military need, but we realize it's actually, we have pent-up demand for good quality housing as well. And so, trying to get at that item, at that issue, and the fact that there's lots of different ways that we're going to have to work to try to address that issue, and it's not just going to be all new buildings, but yes, how can we refurb some of the infrastructure that we already have to make it more higher quality, better efficiency, those kinds of things. I will say, just so everybody knows, speaking of military, FEDC has been working with the borough as well as Explore Fairbanks to help host, as well as you, sir, over at the City of Fairbanks and the FNSB, to help host this year's Alaska Defense Forum. So folks can mark their calendars. It's actually an association with the Association of Defense Communities. This will be, I believe, the third one we'll have in our community. And it's right now scheduled for August 29th and 30th. With a couple of swing days, tours. There's going to be tours, actually, the preceding Monday and the following Thursday, just before and after the event, of both the installations here in the community, but as well as UAF. So mark your calendars. A lot of folks will be coming to the community to discuss military issues and Alaska's place in the world relative to national defense, August 29th and 30th. And I believe it's going to be held over there at the Westmark.
How many participants are you looking at?
Ideally, over 200.
Wow.
All in. Again, there'll be folks coming from across the country as well as around the state. It should be a really good event.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, we got about a minute left, sir. How do you want to conclude?
I guess I would conclude where I kind of started. I have a lot of faith and belief in our community and our state. If a vote had gone another way, we would be having a constitutional convention this fall. There's nothing that says we can't have a convention, a different kind of convention if we want to, as citizens, coming together to do really some visioning regarding our community and our state. You know, what do we want to be in 2050? Because I really feel like if we could come to agreement on that, we could get it done. Certainly we can move in earnest and a long way in that direction. So I encourage everyone to participate and give it some thought.
Well, Jomo, I appreciate you being in here. And there's three seasons in Fairbanks. You have winter, construction, and political season. And we start the political season tomorrow. I have Nick Begich, the third, coming in. And I got a feeling he's running for Congress again. And hopefully tomorrow we don't get rained out at the Midnight Sun game.
And I'll be listening to hear what his vision is for our future.
You got it. Fairbanks, I will see you tomorrow.